Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
We are speeding. We are speeding. For a time, at least, there were sections in Montana where the speed limit was not defined by numbers. Instead, it was left up to every driver to choose their own speed limit, one that they were deemed reasonable and prudent. That was the speed limit, whatever you thought was reasonable and prudent. They caught one guy going 150 miles per hour. For him, that was reasonable and prudent. And we laugh at that, but I realize that's me. And that's you, because we each get to set the speed limit for our lives, how we live our lives every day. And man, we are speeding. We're going 150 miles an hour. There is an author named Dr. Richard Swenson, and he writes about how we are so addicted to speed in our culture that even our language reflects this preoccupation we have. And so our language is filled with phrases like time crunch, fast food, rush hour, frequent flyer, rapid transit. He writes, we send packages by Federal Express, use a long-distance company called Sprint, pay our bills with Quicken, schedule our appointments with a day runner, diet with SlimFast in swimming trunks made by Speed. Oh, we are speeding. We're speeding. There was a doctor named Meyer Friedman, and he's the guy who developed the research behind the type A personality profile, and also who invented the phrase hurry sickness. He was a cardiologist, and so he dealt with people who had heart sickness, heart disease. Do you know how he came up with the type A personality and discovered the hurry sickness, that hurry is what often causes people's physical problems? He had an upholsterer come in to reupholster the chairs in the lobby in his waiting room, and the upholsterer commented on the very unusual pattern of wear on the chairs. The upholstery was just like brand new, except for on the very edge of the seats, which was completely frayed. And so through further study, Friedman realized that his patients just hated waiting, and they were so addicted to hurry, they would literally sit on the edges of their seat until it was their time to go in. And it was no coincidence that these high-speed type A personalities were the people coming in because of heart disease. Their hurry sickness was killing them. That other doctor, Richard Swenson, his research led him to the conclusion that half of his patients' physical problems were the result of being too busy. It stemmed from being too busy. We are speeding. We love to go fast, right? There's an engineering professor at Purdue University, and he got impatient with how long it takes charcoal briquettes to warm up so he could barbecue, and so he decided to try pumping pure oxygen into his Weber grill to accelerate the grilling process, and it worked pretty well. And so he thought, I can make this even faster, and so he decided to pump in liquid oxygen. That's what they use in booster rockets when they send rockets into outer space, and it worked pretty well, too. It burned up all the briquettes, all the food, and the entire grill itself in 3 seconds. Someone asked him about it, and he said, it was pretty bright. You didn't want to look at it. It was pretty bright, but he wasn't. And the really sad part is right now, some of you are thinking, I might want to try that. Burgers in 3 seconds? That's pretty good. We're speeding, especially in our culture, in the good old U.S. of A. Did you know that the average amount of vacation days per employee in Italy is 42 days per year, in France is 37, in Germany 35, Brazil is 34, and in all the countries of the world are right in that range, except for America, which ranks dead last in vacation days at an average of 13 vacation days per employee. And not only do we work more weeks of the year, but we also do more work in each week of the year. There's a lady named Juliet Shore. She's a researcher, and she wrote a book called The Overworked American. And she writes about how over the last 25 years in America, workers have added the equivalent of 1 month per year to their work year. So people felt overworked 3 decades ago and complained about it, but we are now working an average of 160 hours more per year than people did in America 25 years ago. Do you know what the problem with all that is? Here it is. A lot of us have decided that we want to move towards becoming love God, love people, followers of Jesus. We've decided that we want to get to a place where we truly love God and truly love people, that we believe that's the life we are made for, that is the best life that we could possibly live. Well, the cost of not slowing is that we will never become the kind of people we want to become, because you cannot love God in a hurry. And you cannot love people in a hurry. And so if we do this journey of life at a high rate of speed, we are never going to get to the destination we want to arrive at. That's the cost of not resting, of not slowing down. Another way we could think about this is a lot of us have decided we want to go on this journey of becoming more and more like Jesus. But still having our own unique personalities. God gave us those. He loves those. That's good. But that there's something about the essence of who we are and how we approach life and how we relate to God and other people that is increasingly becoming more like Jesus. You study Jesus' life, and one thing you'll realize is that Jesus never hurried. Never. You read the accounts of his life in the Bible, and there's never any indication that he was ever in a rush. Like, we never see Jesus saying to his disciples, "Oh, crap, we better bust our butts and get to Capernaum. We're late." Like, it never happens. And it's not like he wasn't busy. He had literally thousands and thousands of people who wanted his time, who wanted his attention, who wanted to be touched by him, who wanted to experience his teaching and his miracles. But still, somehow Jesus managed to do life in a way that he never had to run. We see him repeatedly pulling away to take time to rest, to take time to spend with his closest friends, to pray. And that shouldn't surprise us, because Jesus was God, and God doesn't speed. A theologian named Kosuke Koyama writes this about God. We'll put it on the screen. He says, "God walks slowly because he is love. If he is not love, he would have gone much faster. Love has its speed. It is an inner speed. It is a spiritual speed. It is a different kind of speed from the technological speed to which we are accustomed. It goes on in the depth of our life, whether we notice or not, whether we are currently hit by storm or not, at 3 miles an hour. It is the speed we walk, and therefore it is the speed the love of God walks." And maybe that's our problem. We're going 150, but God moves at 3 miles an hour. In fact, did you know that research has been done on the maturing or lack of maturing of Christians? And what they found is the number one reason people don't grow spiritually is simply because they're too busy. It's the number one impediment. And so we need to learn to walk slowly like God, to move at the speed of love. And everyone seems to agree with this. This is not like something that Christians have a monopoly on, this idea. I mean, all kinds of people today are talking about our need to slow down. I mentioned 2 very respected doctors who say this is not just a spiritual problem, this is a physical problem. If we don't slow down, there is a cost that we will pay. In fact, doctors and psychologists are so aware of this, they've come up with a term to define our problem and our need. The term is margin. We did a series on margin like 2 years ago. If you want, you could go back on the internet and listen to that. But margin is extra space, right? We know that. So like on a piece of paper, the margins are the unused white space around the edges of the paper. And it turns out we need that on a piece of paper. It is extremely difficult to read the words when an entire piece of paper is used Our eyes need that white space. We need margin. Try it out, you'll see. Think of a parking spot. They don't make parking spots so that our cars fit in them perfectly. They leave a little extra unused room on each side, and that's necessary so you can get your car in safely, right? Or highway lanes. They don't make them the exact width of the car so it fits your car snugly. That word doesn't sound snugly. Snugly. It doesn't sound right. That's a word, though, right? Snugly. That sounds really stupid, snugly. Snuggly. Okay. They leave a little extra room so your car's not too snuggly, you know? And we need that, right? And so listen, if that's true for paper and parking spots and highway lanes, well, don't you think it's true for our lives as well? We need margin. We need extra unused time, extra unused energy, extra unused money. One way of defining margin is that margin is the space between my could and my should. Margin is the space between my could and my should. Now, most of us don't think that there's any difference between those two things because we think we should do everything we could do, right? And so we work all the hours we can possibly work. We spend all the money we can possibly spend. We sign our kids up for everything they can possibly do. We really don't say no to much of anything. But margin is the space between our could and our should. To live a life with margin requires that we need to make some tough decisions. Like, we have to say no to some things that maybe we'd rather say yes to. And most of us don't do that. And so most of us live lives with very little or maybe no margin. And there's a cost to that. There is a cost to margin-less living. One is that when margin shrinks, stress expands. When margin shrinks, stress expands. So here's an illustration. One time, I had a flight connection at O'Hare Airport, and I realized, man, I'm not going to have a lot of time between when I land and when my next plane takes off. I'm going to have to hustle over the other gate. But my plane got in late, which cut the amount of time down to almost nothing. And so I literally ran as fast as I could through the O'Hare Airport, not in sneakers. I'm wearing shoes. I'm carrying a suitcase. I am sweating. I am like nearing heart attack status. I run up. And they're about to close the door. I'm like, got there at the last minute. They let me in. I go run into the plane. I find out that I'm sitting in between two other people, no room. And how did I feel? Stressed out, right? Because there's no margin in there. You compare that to a time you've probably had this where, you know, I've got like an hour layover. So I kind of mosey over to the next gate and can buy a soda and get on the plane, find out no one's sitting next to you. How does that feel? No stress, right? You see the difference, and that difference illustrates how we live our lives. When margin shrinks, our stress expands. If we do all the things we can do, stress expands. Another symptom of marginless living is that when margin shrinks, relationships explode. Relationships explode. One reason is when we're running back and forth and we're juggling a thousand things, our stress is expanding. And what happens a lot is we will take out our stress on the people we love in kind of like misdirected anger. And so you blow up at the people you love and you're like, why did I even do that? I'm not really mad at them. It's because you have all this stress because you're living without margin. But it's not just that. It's also that you don't have enough time for the people you love. Did you know, so there's been all kinds of studies conducted trying to figure out why do some kids become emotionally healthy and some don't? But why do some kids become successful adults and some don't? And what they've discovered, looking at all the different factors, is that the number one predictor, nothing else compares, for a child's future emotional health and success is a child who grows up eating at least 5 meals a week with their family. Nothing else compares. They looked at every different aspect, but that is the number one predictor of future emotional health and success. And I don't think it's because they ate healthier food. I think it's because they had parents who made time, who said no to something, so they had time for their kids, and that made that kid feel loved and secure. You can't love in a hurry, right? But when you make time, your kids feel loved. And that's why we need to create margin, because when margin shrinks, relationships explode. You know, it's interesting. So margin, this idea has become kind of a hot topic, kind of a buzzword over the last years, but it is not a new concept at all. In fact, God has a word for margin that he's been using for thousands of years, and it's the word Sabbath. Sabbath. If you have a Bible with you, open to the book of Deuteronomy. If you have a Bible, it's towards the front of the Bible in your table of contents. We'll tell you where that is. If you don't have a Bible, we're going to put the verses on the screen, so you're totally good. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar, and we'd love to give you one today as a free gift. So one of the things that God tells us in the Bible is that we were not designed to do life 24/7. And we hate that. Like, we don't agree with that. We don't want to hear that because we want to get everything in that we can. But God says, no, you are not designed to do life 24/7. In fact, in the first book of the Bible, Genesis, we see God creating. And God creates the earth and the sun and the moon and people. And then on the seventh day, God rests. Why did God rest? Like, did God, was he like, I'm exhausted. I don't think so. Did God need to rest? No. I think the reason God rested is because we're not God. And he wanted to set the example for us to follow. And so he rests on the seventh day, showing us the example that we need a day of rest. And then later comes time where God gives the Ten Commandments, right? So God chooses these 10 laws to guide his people on how to live life the best way possible. And one of the 10, there's only 10, is to take a day of rest. Deuteronomy chapter 5, starting in verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. So God commands people who believe in him and who want to live his kind of life to take one day to rest each week. It's interesting. So God makes that command, and then he tags on at the end this idea about, remember, you were slaves in Egypt. So the commandments were given to the ancient Israelites who had recently been slaves to the Egyptians. They had just gotten out of it pretty recently, and that's great. That's awesome. But what does that have anything to do with this commandment to take a Sabbath? God was reminding them that they didn't get themselves out of slavery. It was not something they did, they accomplished, they worked for. God did it for them. And God told them that because he knew that they would hear this commandment to take a Sabbath and they'd be like, huh, I can't rest. I can't. How can I rest? I've got 1,000 things I have to do. I've got to plant seeds. I've got to harvest crops. I've got to milk the cows. I've got to fix the urn. I've got all this stuff to do. And God kind of preemptively says, listen, it's not about you. It's not about you, okay? Listen, I can get things done without you. You didn't get yourself out of slavery. That's not something you did. I got you out of slavery, and you can take a day of rest and trust me that I can get things done while you're not. I will take care of you. So a little later in the Bible, not much longer later, God expands this command to take a day of rest to include not only his people, but also his creation. He commands that they are to rest their soil, like all the farmers, every 7 years, that they cannot plant or harvest crops on the seventh year, every 7 years. And God knows how people will respond. And so in Leviticus chapter 25, starting in verse 20, it says this, you may ask, what will we eat in the seventh year if we do not plant or harvest our crops? I will send you such a blessing in the sixth year that the land will yield enough for 3 years. Now, since this time, and some of you may know this, it's been discovered that land will produce far more crops if you work it for 6 years and rest it every seventh year. Surprise! God was right. He knew what he was talking about. Okay? And so farmers now would read that and go, well, that's just the smart thing to do if you want a lot of crops. But they didn't know that back then. That sounded crazy that you would get more in 6 years and a year of rest than doing 7 years. And so the people of Israel are questioning God's sanity, right? They're asking, how will we eat? We can't go a year without food, God. And in verse 21, God says, I will so bless you in the 6 years that you will have enough for the next 3 years. So God commands his people to take a day of rest. He commands them to give their land a year of rest. Did you know that of the Ten Commandments, the commandment to take a Sabbath, a day of rest, is the most mentioned, commented on, and reinforced commandment in the Old Testament? Over and over and over, God goes back again and again and tells his people, reminds his people, he wants them to take a day of rest. And here's what's interesting. I would say that for most people today who believe in God and are at least somewhat serious about trying to live the life that he wants for us, this is the only commandment of the 10 that they're willing to break without even thinking twice about it. Right? Like most Christians today would not knowingly, intentionally worship another god or steal or commit adultery, but not take a Sabbath? You know, whatever. It's like we've thrown this commandment out, but this is the one that God reinforces more than any other. So, today, I want to challenge you, encourage you to start taking a Sabbath. To start building some margin into your life. And I realize that like me and like the ancient Israelites in the Old Testament, you're going to say, but you don't understand. I need an eighth day. Right? Like what I need God to do is give me an eighth day because I can't get everything done in seven. I need God to give me an extra day, but you're telling me God wants to take away a day and have me work only six. How will I get things done? How will things get done? It's not about you. It's not about you. God can get things done without you. Right? Just like he got the Israelites out of slavery, God can get things done without you. And so if you take a day of rest, if you try to honor God with your life by obeying him in this way, he will bless you and you will get more done in 6 days than you would have gotten done in seven. I want to encourage you to take a Sabbath. Now, your Sabbath may not be on Sunday. Like for me, Sunday is probably my most important work day. For me, I take a Sabbath on Friday, and that's okay. And so your work schedule, you might be like, I can't do Sundays. Okay, but you'll take a different day. And Jesus tells us that's okay. So when Jesus came to earth, the religious leaders had made a mess of the Sabbath, of the teachings of God from the Old Testament. They had kind of made it this prison of rules and regulations that people had to follow. They added all these rules that God never put in the Old Testament. And Jesus comes along and he's like, you guys don't understand. Listen, the reason God made the Sabbath was for you. It's not like a requirement to try to appease God. It is a gift that God has given to please you. He said in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, we'll put it on the screen. He's talking to the religious leaders, and he says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so he's saying it was made, God did it as a way to help us because he knew what's best for us. And so we're not going to be legalistic about this. We're not going to, you know, but we do need to do this because we need margin. We need to slow down so we can walk with God. We need to move at the speed of love. So I've got a question. Will you really do this? Will you really do this, or will you just kind of nod and think, man, that sounds smart. it would be smart to live that way. Yeah, sure. Or will you do this? I hope you'll do this. Hey, here's a plan that I kind of use, and I would encourage you to use, that kind of helps you to build slowing and rest into your life. It's to divert daily, unwind weekly, and abandon annually. Check that out. The letters kind of do that lettery thing so you can remember it easier. It wasn't that nice. So you're going to divert daily, unwind weekly, and abandon annually. So you're going to divert daily. So you're going to have a day every day where you're going to take some time to like eliminate distractions, turn off the TV, put away your phone and your computer, and just like spend some time with God. Just breathe and talk to God and listen to God. You can pray, read your Bible, maybe even just take a couple minutes of silence. You're going to divert daily, and that is going to be something that's just going to help you keep your focus on God throughout that day. And then you're going to unwind weekly. And so every week you're going to take this Sabbath day, a day of rest and reflection, a day of refreshing. So you're going to do things you enjoy doing. You're going to try to get more of God into that day because it's so easy in our regular lives to just kind of like, oh, I forgot I believe in God. Like, I'm so busy, you know? And you can spend time with people you love. You could use that day to serve God and people. And so you might find, it may be Sunday, and you say, you know, you come and spend some time with God in the service and then serve some people and maybe children's ministry or whatever. And then I'm going to spend the rest of the day just doing the kind of things that instead of draining me, like most of my week, that fill me up. It's a day to fill me up instead of draining me, okay? And then abandon annually. So every year, have a week where you get out of town. If you're like, I really can't afford to get out of town, you could do this in your own house. The key, either way, is you're abandoning your schedule, your to-do list, your phone, you know, just all those things. And I'm just going to take a week where I'm just going to relax and focus and recharge. Divert daily, unwind weekly, abandon annually. Will you do it? Will you do it? This seems to be an appropriate time to mention the sabbatical that I'm about to go on. If you're on our email list, you got an email this week telling you about that. One thing that churches often do, most churches I think do with their pastors, is they have them take a sabbatical either every 5 years or every seven. Some do it every year. They take like a month. Colleges will do this with professors as well. And so this is my seventh and a half-ish year at Verve. So our church has been going 6 years, but I moved here a year and a half before we started, just worked on getting this thing launched. And so I get a sabbatical. Our management team, when we started and developed our policies, created this every 7 years, you get a sabbatical. So a sabbatical is a time to recharge and study and devote to personal growth, to prepare you for the next 7 years of ministry. And the idea is that you're trying to proactively protect and care for your pastors in hopes of increasing their effectiveness and their longevity in ministry. If you studied it, you'd be like shocked because there are all sorts of dismaying statistics about pastors. For instance, you might be surprised to find that 1,500 pastors quit ministry. Not quit their ministry, not like leave their church, but just decide, I'm not going to be in ministry anymore. 1,500 every month. In America, every month. 80% of Bible college and seminary graduates quit ministry within their first 5 years of ministry. Like if you went to Bible college seminary, you're like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life. And within 5 years, they're like, I can't do this anymore. Only one out of every 10 pastors who start in ministry will retire in ministry. 9 out of 10 quit along the way. There are just some aspects of being a pastor that are really difficult. I'm not whining. I love what I get to do. I consider it an honor to do what I do, so this is not me whining. But I do think it's wise that our church implemented this policy for our pastors. So I'm going to be gone for a little bit, not that long. I'll be back before the end of July. You guys will be like, did he leave? Like, I didn't even know he was gone. So I'm going to be doing some studying and some resting, and I'm going to be serving with a ministry in the Dominican Republic, serving like orphans and street kids and stuff. I'm going to like a counseling retreat center for pastors kind of thing for a week. If you could pray for me, that'd be awesome. I would appreciate that. Me not being here is not going to change anything from the very beginning. We've always intentionally designed it that other people speak here, other people from our staff, and so you're used to that, and it's going to be an awesome 7 weeks while I'm gone. The series we're starting next week is called Antidote, and it's going to be so good. We're going to talk about what's God's answer for us for worry, insecurity, and depression. And all of us are like, I deal with some of that. And so here's the deal. I'm not going to be here for the next 7 Sundays, but you will, okay? I won't be here. You do not have permission to go, okay, I'm going to take off. And so you will be here even if I'm not, okay? All right. And I realize that you might be thinking, I wish I had a job that gave me a sabbatical. That must be nice. Yeah, that is nice. And so you don't get forced. Like part of me is like, I don't want to leave. I love what I do. Like, this stinks. And part of me is like, this would be cool. But you might not get a job that forces you to build this in your life. But you need this too, right? Like, we all need Sabbath. We all need margin in our lives. And so we need to make this decision. We're going to slow down so we can walk with God. We're going to move at the speed of love. If we don't, the cost is huge. We will never truly become the love God, love people, followers of Jesus we want to become. We just won't. And we'll miss out on life, right? We'll just kind of skim along the surface of life and miss out on life. The play Our Town is set in small town middle America at the beginning of the 20th century. Its characters, Dr. and Mrs. Gibbs, their son George, and their daughter Emily, live a very uneventful, ordinary family life. But then, one day, Emily, the daughter, dies during childbirth, delivering her second baby, and the baby dies as well. Sorry for the spoiler alert, but the play was first performed in 1938. So if you're like, I was going to see it, you ruined it. You had your chance. So Emily is clutching her baby. They're both dead. She's watching the scene play out in front of her in the play, and she's realizing that she lived her life and everyone else in her life lived their life without any appreciation for life. Now that she's past it, she realizes it, and she's just consumed with remorse. Well, there's a stage manager. He's kind of like the narrator of the whole thing. And he realizes the anguish she's in over having missed out on appreciating life. And so he gives her this opportunity. He says, you can relive one day. Pick a day. And she picks her 12th birthday. I want to relive my 12th birthday. And so she gets to go back and watch the day again. But she quickly becomes disillusioned because everyone in the scene, her and everyone else, just so callously rushed through the entire day. Right before she has to leave the day, she yells at her mother. She says, oh, mama, just look at me for 1 minute as though you really saw me. I'm acting for you guys over here. Like you thought I'm going to get like a 30-minute sermon. No, you're getting Our Town. Right here. I need a sabbatical. Like, I'm acting. And then she turns to the stage manager and she says to him, she says, I can't go on. It just all goes by so fast. And she starts weeping. And between her tears, she says to the stage manager, she says, do any human beings ever realize life while they're living it? And the stage manager thinks for a second, and he says, no. Well, the saints and poets, maybe they do some. No. No, it's not just the saints and poets. This is a doable thing, right? God wouldn't have told us to do this if this wasn't a doable thing. We can do this, but to do this, we need to make a decision and then actually live it out. And so I'm hoping today that we're going to make a decision. We're going to do this, right? Because we need margin. We need Sabbath. We need to slow down from 150 miles per hour to 3 miles per hour so that we can walk with God. We need to move at the speed of love. If we don't, we're never really going to love God and love people the way we want to. Let's pray for that. Let's pray. So God, I love this church. I consider it such an honor to be a part of, to be involved in leading it, to be the pastor. And it's sad for me to be gone for 7 weeks, and I'm going to miss it. But I know it's going to be an awesome 7 weeks. And I thank you for the wisdom of the people who put this into our policies to have a sabbatical. And I pray that you'd use it in my life to make me better when I come back. God, the rest of everybody here, we don't get jobs that tell us we have to rest. We have to choose that for ourselves. And my prayer is that we'd make a decision today because it's so important. The stakes are so high. We were made to love God and love people. The purpose of life, we wonder, why am I here? Why do I exist? It's to love God and love people. We can't love you in a hurry. We can't love people in a hurry. So unless we slow down, unless we find a way to rest, we will never live out the reason we were born. And so would you help us to make a decision today? Maybe we did not plan on coming here to make a decision, but would you help us to make a decision today? I am going to build Sabbath into my life. I want to divert daily. I want to unwind weekly, having a Sabbath day of rest, and I want to abandon annually. God, would you help us to do that? Help us to do that because we want to become more like Jesus, and that's how he lived. And we pray in his name. Amen.